Shri Vrindavan Dham ki, Shri Mayapur Dham ki, Ganga Maya ki, Jamuna Maya ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jainitai Gaurukam. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga. All glories to Shri Guru. So you continue with your, yeah. Okay. So then, maybe if those who are not in the doing the performance, if they can just move forward into this middle area.
And then, in ways, you just kind of turn around and stay here and control everybody there. Recap for those who have been with us and for those who have just arrived. We're going through the first 10 chapters of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The boys presented a drama about Narada Muni. Can one of the boys say a few significant points, something that they remember that came from that drama?
First he had the conversation between Sudha Goswami and Shana Ganeshi, and then Visharanya. Shana Ganeshi, he asked Sudha Goswami about why did Parikshit Maharaj left his home and why was he cursed, and how come, from where Vyasadeva got the inspiration of writing the most, the essence of all the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam. And Sudha Goswami describes about the meeting of Narad Muni and Vyasadeva. And Narad Muni, first of all, asks about how...
What was the question Narad Muni asked?
Narad Muni asks that... was he satisfied by identifying the body or the mind as the means of self-realization? So, and then he says that you have compiled a great job of, by dividing all the four Veda, dividing one Veda into four, and you have also compiled a great work, Mahabharata. So, but still you look dissatisfied. So, Vyasadeva, he asked him that whatever you told about me is completely perfect, but still my heart is not yet satisfied. Something is missing, so I request you to find out the cause. So that time Narad Muni, he explains, gives an example of his own past life, how he was born as a son of a maid servant, and then after some time his mother was met at death due to a bit of a snake, and then he went on alone in the dense forest through mountains and different places, and then he started meditating upon the Lord, and once he was in complete ecstasy and tears started rolling out his eyes, and Lord Krishna just suddenly appeared on the lotus in his heart, and that time Narad Muni was very happy, but the Lord, he just quickly disappeared, and so it caused great pain to Narad Muni, and he tried again and again to see the form, but he couldn't see. So Lord, seeing the pitiable condition of Narad Muni, that he was not able to see him, and he was so much sad due to that, so he says that in this lifetime you won't be able to see me, and only in the next life you will become my great devotee. And then Narad Muni is very pleased with it, and after some time he's rolling all over the earth chanting the glories of Lord Hari, and after some time he leaves his body. And then he gets a transcendental body suitable for devotional service. And he's roaming peacefully without any envious. And he's roaming all over the world, glorifying the Lord. And when Lord Hari is sitting in the water of devastations and breathes in, Lord Brahma enters his body, and Lord Narad Muni also goes into his body. And after 4.3 billion solar years, he comes back as in the form of Narad Muni, and then he starts preaching in that way.
He meets Vyasadeva, his disciple,
yeah.
Instructs him. Okay, and then Vyasadeva, thank you, that was very good. He Vyasadeva takes the instructions of his spiritual master, and he sits down to meditate in trance. And that was presented yesterday. Can somebody remember the vision that he had? Any of the verses, the essence of the verses. In a nutshell, is it somebody else? He's Uttama?
Well, he saw Lord along with his illusory energy, and then it became clear that all the miseries living entities go through due to their misidentification, due to their anarthas, and these anarthas can be removed only by the process of devotional service. That, you know, living entity can become happy only by...
This is in contrast to Vyasadeva's presentation of all of the scriptures, which were to encourage people to engage in pious activities, religious duties. So now, directly, devotional service, and this will perfectly satisfy the living entities. And then we spoke on the Atmarama verse, and we launched into the drama of Ashvatthama. At the end of that drama, we saw, well, at the beginning of the drama, we saw Krishna for the first time appearing in the pages of the Bhagavatam. And he appeared as the chariot driver and the instructor, and then there was a discussion backwards and forwards, kill him, don't kill him. And Arjuna, with the instructions from Krishna, he was able to give a conclusive decision and deal with Ashvatthama. Then we went into the teachings of Queen Kunti. Krishna was just about to leave. Another Brahmastra was launched at the womb of Uttara. So she came forward and asked Krishna to protect her. And then Queen Kunti, she observed Krishna inside and externally protecting them all. So she came forward again to offer prayers. And we got halfway through those prayers up to the point where Queen Kunti was praying, please let those calamities happen again and again, because by being put into such difficulty, because we're solely and wholly dependent upon you, we always call out to you and you always manifest, you're always present. So please let those calamities happen again and again. And then we come to today's verse, and Bhakrashwari Mataji is going to elaborate on this verse, teachings of Queen Kunti, text number 26. And then we'll carry on with the action. And then after that, Grandfather Bhishma Dev, we have a little drama about Grandfather Bhishma Dev, leading us through to the end of the 10th chapter. Thank you. Okay, anybody who's not sitting on a mat on the sides, please move into the middle. So you can concentrate, you're not worried about that. There's more space here.
All the space here is available. Okay, so you can just fill up the space in the middle.
So, when can you continue her prayers? Janmeshwarya Shutashibir Edamana Madath Muman. Never had Abhidhatam Vait Vam Akinchana Gocharam. That means that those who are progressing towards increasing madness of Janma, high birth, Aishwarya, the great wealth, Shruta, education, and Shri, the bodily beauties, can neither Arhat Abhidhatu Vai, can never address Lord feelingly, because Lord is Vam Akinchana Gocharam. Gocharam means who easily approached by Akinchana. Akinchana, that the person who doesn't possess anything in material sense, who doesn't keep anything for her own satisfaction or his own satisfaction. And Srila Prabhupada explains, whole world progresses toward increasing intoxication with this for so-called advancement or material civilization, the Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, and Shri. People who possess these assets become proud, artificially proud, and they get completely illusioned with this pride. In one class, Srila Prabhupada compared them with people who dream that they are flying. Being so illusioned, they think that they are God, because this asset naturally that the property of the God. And Srila Prabhupada also mentions that if this asset is not used in Krishna's service, then they become zero. As zero are useless or of no value if digit one for Krishna is not placed before them. So question, why is it intoxication? Why Srila Prabhupada mentions that this intoxication, this for advancement of civilization? Because even this dream of flying or possessing these assets, it's temporary, as any state of intoxication. And because these materially intoxicated people feel themselves being God, they cannot even utter the name of God, as it was in the case of Prakashananda Saraswati, who in his blasphemy of the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cannot even utter the name of the Lord, like Shri Krishna Chaitanya. He was just uttering this Chaitanya, he's just a pretender, he's just a madman. And so naturally, they are arhat, they don't deserve Abhidhatam to address the Lord feelingly. Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out on real intoxication in this world, or real madness. He says, everyone should become mad after holy name. When do these feelings in our address to the Lord while chanting the holy name come from? When our heart is melted by holy name, then natural loving feelings toward the Lord manifest in our address. Therefore, this feeling depends on our ability to attentively hear the holy name. And Rupa Goswami explains the adhikara, or eligibility for relishing the nectar of this feeling in the holy name. He said, I don't know how much nectar can these two syllables, Krishna, produce. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, we then desire many, many of mouths. And when that name enters the ears, we desire many, many millions of ears. This is the form of real madman, intoxicated with real ambrosia, the holy name, millions of mouths and millions of ears. Such eagerness to hear the holy name makes one eligible finally to address the Lord humanly. Rupa Goswami continues in this verse, when the holy name dances in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind, and therefore all the senses become inert. This inertia of the senses is the point of the beginning of our approaching the Lord, actually. This is the starting point of approaching the Lord. Therefore, sometimes the Lord being so kind to the devotee, being so eager to make the devotee closer to him, very quickly, what he does? He takes away all the object of attraction, which we mentioned, these four ones, the Janma, Ishvara, Shuta, Shibir, to make it mind and senses finally materially inert. Thus devotee become a Kinchana, one who doesn't possess anything materially impoverished. From material point of view, it gives suffering. But Srila Prabhupada mentioned, this is good sign, as much as the falling of temperature of diseased person is a good sign. This is a general process to decrease the degree of fever. From another point of view, this Akinchana may have everything, may have Janmashvara Shuta Shibir, but he really doesn't value all the things. That's not where his shelter is in this material world. The example is Pundarik Vidyamitra, the great devotee of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's so wealthy. He was surrounded by so great luxury, and he was dressed like a king, and so many servants were around him, just serving him, worshipping him. But as soon as he just heard this very famous verse, Aho Bakiyan Stanakala Kutam, glorifying the Lord, the kindness of the Lord, it goes like this, oh my, who is more kind than my Lord, who gave the place of mother in the spiritual world, even to Putana, who came to kill him. So just hearing this only verse, he got completely mad, because that was his shelter, the glorification of the Lord and the remembrance of him. And another example, very famous, of such an Akinchana, that Sanatana Goswami, who keep the touchstone, the most valuable thing in this material world, which we can usually we cannot even find, he kept it in the pile of garbage. So this is Akinchana. Therefore, devotee don't adjust to these calamities, knowing well that they are coming from the Lord for their benefit. As Srila Prabhupada mentioned so many times, the best use of a bad bargain. This is how pure devotee thinks. Let this calamity come, said Maharaja Parikshit. Let this snake bird bite me at once. Let this happen. Or Maharaja Chitraketa, okay, let me be cursed by Parvati and let me become a demon and then die. Or Haridas Thakur, people were beating him, saying, please, if you return, not having killed you, ruler will kill us, please die. He replied, okay, you want me to die, I will die. As Vishwanath Chakravarti explained this vision of advanced devotee, vision of his suffering, a devotee understands that happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and committing aparadhas are special mercy from the Lord. It's like a father. The Lord becomes like a father who sometimes makes his child drink milk and sometimes makes him drink bitter neem juice. Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son, and other times he beats him. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as arrangement of the Lord, acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, the Lord certainly knows what is the best for me, even if I don't know. karma and time have no effect on a devotee. So this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere, because he takes shelter in some other things, not fully in Krishna. And it's explained in Nectar of Devotion. The Srila Prabhupada gives example of Draupadi, who make the Lord so much obliged to her for this cause that Lord couldn't even forget her. By that one calling out, by that fully surrendered chant of Krishna's name, Govinda, Draupadi has purchased me. I cannot forget her here. Because of this one calling out full-heartedly, Govinda, I cannot forget her. She will be in my mind. Thus Krishna, known as Akinchana Vitaya, or the possession of someone who is materially impoverished, or who doesn't possess anything material, he gives himself to such devotee. That's how or which devotee we should become.
Reciting these prayers of Queen Kunti, so a bit of background to the drama. So without further ado, we will carry on with the prayers of Queen Kunti.
Can you stand right for the audience?
A little bit forward.
My Lord, you can be easily approached by those who are materially exhausted. But one who is walking the path of achievements in high parentage, opulence, education, and physical beauty cannot address you with sincere feeling, but you are the property of the materially destitute, and you are the self-satisfied master of the monists. In your reciprocation, Lord, you are equal to everyone. The living beings create their own destinies, and their quarrels are due to social intercourse. O Lord, no one can understand your transcendental pastimes, which appear to be that of an ordinary human. You have no arbitrary objects of love or envy. It is only people's imagination that you are partial. It is surely confounded, O soul of the universe, that you work while inactive, that you take birth though you are unborn. You descend among animals, men, sages, and aquatics. Who can understand this? My dear Krishna, Yashoda took a rope to bind you when you misbehaved, and you lowered your head and began to weep like a child. Tears rolled down your cheeks, washing off the mascara smeared about your eyes. And you were afraid, though fear personified is afraid of you. This sight bewilders me.
So, Kunti has flatly said that Sri Krishna's pastimes are a mystery. She is simply amazed. The Lord is gigantic, infinite, and supremely powerful, and at the same time, a plaything in the presence of his pure devotee. This vision of Damodar is adored by her because she is conscious of his exalted position. Yashoda Mata, however, is not conscious of it. Thus, Krishna's mother is glorified. Queen Kunti will now indicate the reason for the Lord's advent.
Some say that the unborn is born to glorify pious kings, and others say that he is born to please King Yadu. In his family you appear, just as sandalwood happens to appear in the Himalaya hills. Others claim you have appeared at the behest of your parents, for whose welfare you descend, and to kill the enemies of the demigods. Still others say that Brahma, who is your son, beseeched you to appear for relieving the earth of her burden. And yet others affirm that you have come to rekindle devotional service by hearing, remembering, and worshipping, so that the suffering conditioned souls might take advantage and gain release.
God is more merciful to the suffering living beings than they can expect. He comes himself to help them. Just think of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But even though the Lord will come, who will see him? Who will recognize him? The necessary vision can be had only by devotional service, starting with hearing from the right sources.
O Krishna, those who constantly hear, chant, and repeat your transcendental pastimes, or take pleasure in others doing so, certainly see your lotus feet, which can alone put an end to the repetition of births.
Now, although the inimical kings were killed in the Kurukshetra War, their friends and descendants are still around to direct hatred at the victors. Kunti knows that without Krishna, her sons are not much shelter. She cannot bear the thought of separation from him.
Oh, my Lord, you have executed all things yourself. Are you leaving us today, though we are utterly dependent on your mercy and have no one else to protect us? And even now, when all kings are at enmity with us, as the name and fame of a particular body is finished with the exit of the living spirit, if you do not look on us, then all our fame and activities, along with the Pandavas and the Yadavas, will be for nothing. Our kingdom is marked now with the impressions of your feet, and so it appears beautiful. But when you leave it, all these cities and villages are flourishing because the herbs and grains are in abundance, the trees are full of fruits, the rivers are flowing, the hills are full of minerals, and the oceans full of wealth. This is only because you are glancing over them.
Ah, isn't that nice? Now, if you think about it, when bound by family affection, one is sometimes obliged to ask favors from the Lord. But a pure devotee is ashamed to ask anything in self-interest. The Pandavas are Kunti's own sons, and the Vrishnis belong to a paternal family. Krishna was equally related to both families, and they both needed his help. Kunti wished to remain with her sons. By his doing so, her paternal house would lose out. All these partialities bothered the queen, and so she decided to cut the ties.
O soul of the universe, O Vishwamurti, please therefore sever the tie of my affection for kinsmen, the Pandavas and the Vrishnis, so that I may become fully dependent on you. O Lord of Madhu, as the Ganges flows to the sea without hindrance, let me be constantly attracted to you without diversion.
Yes, very good. Here Krishna is addressed by Kunti, indicating his all-powerful ability to cut the hard knot of family affection. Sometimes, the Lord, out of special affinity towards a weak devotee, breaks the family affection by force of arranged circumstances. He thus makes the devotee completely dependent on him and clears the path for returning to Godhead. But to cut off all family affection means to broaden the field of activities. Srila Prabhupada says, to cut off the tie of all other affections does not mean complete negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. Affection for others is a symptom of life. You see, undiverted attention to the Lord's service is life's highest perfection, and this is Kunti's prayer. When she wants to sever the family relation, she means to cut off the relation of the skin. The skin relation causes bondage, but the soul relation causes freedom. This relation of the soul to the soul is based on the relation with the supersoul. Seeing by the light of the sun means to see the sun and everything the sun touches. Without knowing the Lord, seeing in the darkness is not seeing. And, interestingly enough, since service to the devotees is tantamount to service of the Lord, Kunti's affection for the Pandavas and the Vrishnis is not outside the range of bhakti.
Does hearing the eloquent prayers of Kunti, the unlimited Lord mildly smile? Krishna then informed others of his departure by entering the palace of Hastinapura, but upon preparing to leave, he was stopped by King Yudhishthira, who implored him lovingly, and the Lord consented to state an account of the king's love. Yudhishthira was mortified at the massacre for his own enthronement, and by the supersoul superhuman action, he could not be suited even by Vyasa, the Lord himself, nor by all historical evidence that the fight was just. Krishna arranged this in order that Bhishma would be glorified and would die peacefully.
King Yudhishthira, son of Dharma, overwhelmed by the death of his friends, was aggrieved just like a common man. Thus deluded by misplaced affection, he began to speak.
O my lot, I am the most sinful man. Just see my heart, which is full of ignorance. This body is meant for others, but it has killed many phalanxes of men. I have slain boys, brahmanas, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors, and brothers. Even if I live for millions of years, I will not be relieved from the hell that awaits me. A king who kills for a righteous cause, who maintains his citizens and is not implicated in sin. But this does not apply to me. I have killed many who are dear to women and have thus caused enmity to such an extent that common welfare work cannot possibly undo it. As one cannot filter muddy water through mud or make pure a wine-stained pot with wine, so one cannot atone for the killing of men by sacrificing animals.
So the emperor supplies a hint to performing sacrifice in the Kali Yuga. The recommendation is Harinam Yajna, as inaugurated by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
And so, Maharaj Yudhishthira journeyed to the scene of the massacre, along with Krishna, Arjuna and others. They arrived in aristocratic style and went straight to Bhishma, who was laying on a bed of arrows, like a demigod falling from the sky. Although physically unfit, Bhishma welcomed them all with sweet words and hearty expressions, giving particular attention to Lord Sri Krishna. Among those assembled to see the Bharati, Narad Muni, Daumya, Vyasa, Parashurama, Vashishta, Asita, Gautama, Shukadeva Goswami, Kashyapa, and many others, all with their disciples. The Pandavas sat silently, overcome with grief at the sight of their dying grandfather. Yudhishthira in particular felt saddened as he considered himself responsible for the massacre that had just taken place. Bhishma congratulated the Pandavas on their great victory, and with great love and affection spoke to Yudhishthira.
Yudhishthira, don't blame yourself for all that has happened. It's not your fault. You have all suffered terribly and have undergone terrible injustices just for being the sons of religion personified. And Kunti, your dear mother, my daughter-in-law, she has also suffered greatly. Do you know why? It is all due to time. inevitable time controls everyone on all planets. It is irreversible. Otherwise, how could there have been reverses in the presence of you, the son of Dharmaraj, the mighty Bhima, Arjun, the greatest of all warriors and archers, and above all, Lord Sri Krishna himself? No one can know the plan of the Lord. Even the greatest philosophers are bewildered by it. Everything that has happened is all within the plan of the Lord. And now, you must accept that plan and follow it. You are the appointed administrative head. You are the king. You must protect your citizens. They are all feeling helpless after this battle. Will you do it?
My heart has been relieved of the burden by your instructions. To the best of my ability, as much as I know, I will follow the plan of the Lord.
Good. Lord Sri Krishna, he moves amongst us like a descendant of Vishnu. But he is that one supreme personality of Godhead. The original Narayan, the supreme controller and enjoyer. Lord Shiva, Narad, Kapila, they know very confidentially his glories by direct contact. At times, you may have thought of him as your cousin, your friend, a messenger or counselor, but he is that very personality of Godhead. And despite being equally friendly to everyone, he has graciously come before me now that I am ending my life. Because I am his unflinching servitor. Know it, Yudhisthira. He appears in the mind of his devotee by undivided attention and devotion, meditation and chanting of his holy names. And he relieves his devotee of all the bondage of his fruitive activities at the time of his leaving his body. Rest, thou concern. Don't pamper me, Arjun. Bring me some water. Ah, how sweet this water is. A fitting drink for an old man. Now, Yudhisthira, what are your questions?
Then we've spoken many topics, including the essence of different religious duties, all the various orders of life, and the application of attachment and detachment. He explained the principle of charity, the pragmatism of kings, and activities for salvation. Then he explained the duties of women and devotees, and the occupational duties of different statuses in life, referring widely to the great history such as Ramayana, until that time desired by mystics who will die at will approach.
Grandsire, thank you. I've heard all that I need, but the sun is just passing into the northern hemisphere.
Then, that great warrior spoke on thousands of topics with thousands of meanings. who fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men, stopped speaking and fixed his wide open eyes upon Sri Krishna, who stood before him, dressed in yellow garments that glittered and shone. By pure meditation, he was freed from all inauspiciousness and bodily pain, and thus all the external activities of his senses stopped, and he prayed within his mind.
For so long, my thinking, feeling, and willing have been engaged in different subject matters and occupational duties. Now, let all of them be surrendered unto the Supreme Lord. He is the intimate friend of Arjuna, appearing on this earth in his transcendental bluish body, the color of a tamal tree, attracting everyone. Let his beautiful glittering yellow garments and lotus-like face be the object of my attraction. On the battlefield, his flowing hair turned ashen from the dust of the horse's hooves. And from the heat and the strain, the beads of sweat decorated his beautiful lotus-like face. These decorations, intensified by my arrows which wounded him, were all enjoyed by him. Let my mind go unto him. When Arjuna appeared in ignorance, he delivered the Bhagavad Gita for the benefit of all mankind, fulfilling my desire and breaking his own promise. He got down from his chariot and picked up a wheel to attack me. As if angry from the wounds of my sharp arrows, he charged at me like a lion charges an elephant, dropping his upper garment, his body smeared with his blood. Let my mind go unto that chariot driver of Arjuna, standing with a whip in one hand and reins in the other, carefully protecting his dearmost friend, Arjuna, in all circumstances. Let my mind go unto the Supreme Lord Krishna, whose actions and sweet smiles of love attracted the hearts of the gopis of Vrindavan. At the Rajasuya sacrifice, amidst all the elite men of the world, it was he who was worshipped by one and all as the most exalted personality of Godhead. I was there, I saw it, and I kept it in my memory to fix my mind upon the Lord. Now, at my dying moment, let me meditate upon that one Supreme Lord who is present before me now, identical with the Lord in the heart, and let me enter into his eternal service.
And thus, the great grandfather Bhishma surrendered his mind, speech, sight, and action unto Lord Sri Krishna. And becoming silent, his breath stopped as he returned back home to Godhead. Knowing that he had left, all those present became silent, like a bird at the end of the day. Then both man and demigod sounded drum kiss his honor, and flowers fell from the sky. Haribo!
Haribo!
So it happened, the passing away of Bhishma. And Yudhishthir performed the last rites, and then returned to Hastinapur. and rule the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Shri Krishna.
Considerable contribution to the final product, because I know that one script was written and he made some very tasteful changes, and that's why this play is so moving now. Thank you all.
We wanted to have CNN here tonight to record it, but I couldn't.
We hope to see more such brilliant and inspiring performances from our adult participants. We'll have our boys also working on plays. So drama will become a very vital part of this course from now on. We have some time left. I just want to say that although we announced yesterday that we would be able to give these around 80 important verses, due to the technical chaos that we have to live with here in Mayapur, that won't be possible today, but we definitely will be able to give it to you on Monday. And again, on Monday, we'll be discussing the essays that you turned in before, in which you expressed your opinions about the class and how it might be improved. So one class period will be devoted to that. And also on Monday, we'll be able to give you these verse summaries and a chapter summary for your further reading Monday evening, so you'll be prepared for the normal resumption of classes on Tuesday. So we still have 10 minutes left, if anyone. Yeah?
I guess what stood out from the, just the production was the element of that when Bhishmadeva is mentioning that is, I mean, it's a coupling the point that Vyasadeva is being told by Narad Muni about that one is taking the body and the mind as the means of elevation. Mm. And then where Bhishmadeva is then saying that I performed all these occupational duties and all that, and now may those all be connected to the Lord. So then from there it would appear that simply because of our conditioned nature, then the Lord is so kind that he allows that the illusion that we think is real, that we can somehow or another connect it to the Lord. But so because it's so real for us, we take it that that is the important element, the performance of the duties. But actually, from what is mentioned by these two Mahajans, then actually it's only its connection to the Lord. So the Lord is the dynamic element there. The Lord, the Lord's name, the devotee, that interaction, that desire by the devotee to serve the Lord. And then the body, the mind, the occupational duties simply become a medium. But it's a, because it's a medium, it's touch, so therefore one is elevated through that. But actually, without the medium, if you just had the Lord and His name, you would be elevated. You know, so it's interesting, because we take the material so seriously, then the Lord allows it to actually be a serious part of the devotional process. But in actuality, it's only the Lord and His name and the devotees that are what's actually with Him. That came out from today's discussion, the presentation.
In the moments that we have left, if anyone has any questions, who would like to address to Maharaj or myself? We have 6 minutes. No? Everyone? Oh, yes.
The course is based around questions and answers. Will we need to research these and be able to answer questions on these questions and answers in the future?
I think you should be very definitely prepared for that. Maharaj and I have not yet talked about what sort of examinations will be held in the future. Well, we have talked a little bit, but you know, really nailing it down and coming to a final form, no. But since the we can say the theme of the whole course is the questions and answers of Bhagavatam, and we will continue. I'm going to be actually, by the grace of some of these suggestions that came in the essays, I'm going to be able to even make that more understandable to the student body than has been before, I think, where the questions start and how the answers are, so, you know, may not even be in the same chapter or even the same canto, but we'll try to have a diagrammic presentation of that along with the written text. So definitely, if you see us making so much effort that you understand this, then you can quite safely assume that we're going to be asking about this on the essays. So that is a basic theme the basic idea of our course. But as I said, Maharaj gave me the idea that was last February or March or something, and I pondered on it, and I came up with up to the middle of the fifth canto kind of skeleton version of these weekly chapter study guides. But now, as we're actually moving along with the class, we see the need to fill these out more and more. Now we're having dramas, which I think is very helpful in impressing our hearts with these leelas, which are so nectarian and important for us to understand. But there are other things too. So yes, we started with a skeleton, and now we're starting to... We hope it doesn't turn out like that story of the four Brahmins, from four Brahmacharis who graduated from Gurukul. You know this story from Pancharatra? There are four Brahmacharis who graduated from their Gurukul in the forest ashram. And three of them in particular were very proud of their learning. And so they were walking along in the forest and they found a pile of bones. And one of them, who wanted to demonstrate his knowledge, he said, "Just see, these are clearly the bones of a tiger." And the others looked at each other, and then one stepped forward and said, "That's nothing. That's not knowledge. I'm actually going to, by mystic power, put flesh and fur back on these bones." And so by chanting a mantra, he did that. And then the third brahmachari said, "That's nothing. By my mantra, I'll bring the tiger to life." The fourth one began to climb a tree. And they said, "What are you doing?" "Well, I'm just preparing myself for what I'm going to do when you finish with what you're doing. And then they get paid him, never mind. And the third one spoke the mantra, the tiger came to life and ate all three of them. And the fourth one safely up in the tree. So in fleshing out this study guide, we don't want to go too far and get eaten up by so many details and side, you know, we want to keep the focus on the main thing, which is the tattva and lila of Srimad Bhagavatam. So your comments have helped us reminding us that this is the essence. Because from Bhagavatam you can, of course, go in so many directions, referring to so many different other scriptures. So we're really trying to bring out fuller and fuller the nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So you are responsible to learn that, and at some point there will be exams on this.
The concept, I mean, one of the concepts is that the body of knowledge, means the Vedic concept is different from the modern, in that the modern you study and then the test is unknown. And many times then, you know, it's very cleverly put and all that, because what knowledge was learned is very simple. Or very technical, you know, very, how you say, you memorize a lot of things.
Facts and figures.
Yeah, facts and figures. But the Vedic is more that it's understood and realized. You know, it's just like there, they were very knowledgeable, didn't realize what the result of their work is. The fourth one may not have been so, how you say, you know, erudite, yeah, erudite like that, but he was clever enough to climb a tree because he could apply his education. So that's very important, is the application. For us, it's one is familiar with these verses, one understands the questions, the connections between them, the importance, the discussions, and all is the medium for discussing the Lord and his pastimes. So someone may have the ability to memorize the verses. That's nice. So that's a plus. But if they know the verses but don't actually understand the meanings or application, then we consider that to be those three brahmacharis. You know what I'm saying? The person understands the essence. So as we work it out, it'll be exactly known what are the questions that you'll be asked, exactly on what you'll be expected to know. But it's quite vast because you're dealing. So then it's a matter of, and we'll only ask you one question. You know what I'm saying? Just like, to give an example. Let us say that one of the things is okay, these major verses one should know, be familiar with. So it's not a matter of you have to then write down so many of the verses, this, that. We'll only ask you for one. You know? Or there's so many questions just based on one or some particular major point. Or, does that make sense? In other words, the test will be very easy. You'll be able to sit down probably 10, 15 minutes or less, 5 minutes, be able to complete it. But by that, it's like the, probably gives the example of testing one grain in a pot of rice to understand the whole pot's done or not. So the questions will be such that if you can answer this, we know you know what's talking about. And because it may be any of so many, there may be 30 questions, 50, 100 questions, we'll only ask you to take one.
Actually, Srila Prabhupada, in the early days of ISKCON, he also prepared a Bhakti Shastri examination for his students. And it was actually very easy, because Prabhupada was interested that the essence be grasped.
Yeah, it's the essence. It's not facts and figures. It's
so we intend to follow that kind of line. And our approach is much more, it's subtle, but it's also very insightful, because we're looking into the psychology of our students and trying to look into their hearts. And that's really what counts.
So in other words, whatever is important, you take that it's not that you're just, okay, just like we discussed here, this point about that actually it's not the externals of engaging in Krishna's service. It's actually Krishna and his name, form, qualities, path that's important. That connection, that desire to be connected with, the desire to be in the association of devotees, that's the working principle. The others are because we can't do that 24/7. Then we take up duties and this and our bath and the family and our money and our, you know, clothes and, you know, all these different things. But so that's something very major, exceedingly major, because we've already had in the first pastime, Vyasadeva was made that point that you missed the point. And then Bhishma Dev is in his final concluding of after saying all those things that we just talked about, makes this point. So the first two pastimes are making this point. You know, get to the essence. Or you could say in Arjuna and Ashwatthama, get to the essence. You know, that you have to kill them, but you have to not kill them. So you can only do that by understanding essence. Rules won't get you. It's the essence that will get you the answer. So we can see is right here in the beginning, this is what the Bhagavatam is giving that's unique of all scripture. So these things have to be taken on board. These things are the things that we're looking at, not just memorizing. Because memorization, one will forget. Krishna, we don't forget. Mm. You know, it's like there was an example in Malaysia. One devotee had been, you know, back in the days of when deprogramming was popular. So in Malaysia, there was something, may have been because this Muslim got, they caught somebody or family like this, and they thought he was crazy, so they put him in, you know, in the insane asylum, and they put him on all these far-out psychotropic drugs and stuff like that. He forgot everything, amnesia, but he would still chant Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
He couldn't remember who he was, family, nothing, but he'd still chant. So it's a different, what we're looking for is something different. The parrot spoke it, but the parrot understood, you know, realized it. So we're looking for realized parrots, not...
Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.